Good morning, everyone. When I read this reading yesterday morning, the thought that came to me spontaneously was, this is so compassionate of both Christ and Krishna. That's just what came through my mind. And instantly, I was reminded of the story when Swami Kriyananda, he sort of tells it on himself, but in his book, The New Path, at some point, he was just allowing himself to realize how much progress he had made. And then somehow, and I'm not remembering the story exactly, but Master said to one of the other monks, look how much I have done for Walter. Look how much I've helped him change, sort of removing all thought from Swamiji that he had been responsible for changing himself at all. But in fact, it was Master working through him. And when I had that thought yesterday, I felt such a sense of that grace, of just how present these masters are for us. Because for some reason, I would assume it's because there are a lot of lessons in this reading for me, I think I give this sermon every year. The odds are against it, I want you to know. But I remember, I didn't go back and listen, but I literally remember last year when I got up to talk that I said, I used to think this reading was just awful. Why would he talk about casting pearls before swine? And I just couldn't wrap my head around it. But last year I said, now I can see some good in it. And yesterday I thought, there's so much compassion in this reading. So I just felt these masters working with me and expanding my vision, which helped me to see where to go with this talk today. I don't know if anybody else has this experience, but very often when I'm listening to a talk, either a Sunday sermon or a talk that's been recorded, or I'm reading one of our books, my mind is doing this. It's saying, boy, I really wish so-and-so could be reading this, or I hope so-and-so's listening to this talk right now, kind of busily figuring out what the lesson is for somebody else in the moment. And every once in a while, when I'm sitting right down here, and I say to myself, I hope they're listening, then I say to myself, are you listening, Shanti? It seems obvious, but anyway, it happens to me. Maybe nobody else does that. So I realized what a setup this reading is. Don't cast pearls before swine. Sort of Jesus saying to us, be careful what you go to teach people. And I thought, fair enough, because the truth of that, I mean, another truth of wishing that somebody else were listening or hoping they are, or hoping that I might find a way to convey this truth to somebody. It's not just arrogance. It's this deep desire to share with those that we love the truth as we've seen it. And the more we realize it to be true, the more we feel the love of it, the joy of it, the more we naturally want to take that to people we love. And we get pretty certain, at least I do, that if I find just the right way to say it, they will eventually hear it. So I make the next mistake at times, which is telling them again and again and again, because as soon as I figure out how to say it, how could they not hear it? It's just simply the truth. But the motivation is one that comes from love. And I often feel that, even though the mistake is the mistake. And then I was struck. This is all, I'm just taking you through my day, my yesterday, today, with a few things that I heard on Guru Day, a few things that Asha said, there were three or four lines that really stayed with me. I couldn't get to the recording of those talks. They're not up on the web, but I think that I have them accurately. One of the things she said is that although she knew Swami Kriyananda to be in a place to answer almost any question that anybody ever had in the years that she spent with him, that she never once saw him or heard him try and persuade anybody of anything. He would have a conversation with them, he would answer questions, he would communicate with them about the issue, but he never tried to persuade them. He would never fight against their resistance. That if he felt that coming up, he would just become quiet or lovingly quiet. He didn't withdraw his energy, but he never tried to persuade them. He himself says in his commentary on this reading, he says, it's so wrong to try and impose what you perceive as the truth on anybody, even if it is the truth, because it takes away from them their birthright, all of our birthrights of free will, that we will get to these answers, these lessons, these truths in our own time, in our own way, and exactly when it is right for us, not when somebody else thinks it's right for us. And right for us means what? When our energy has reached a certain place in our spine, when our soul has evolved on its own long journey to that exact moment in time when it's perfect for us to hear that truth. And in the way that it's perfect for us to hear that truth. And then I started, it just felt so loving to me to remember to not impose our thoughts or feelings on other people. I know there have been times where somebody with all good intention has tried to show me something about the spiritual path. And they tell me the truth, and I know it's the truth, and I know the words, but I find myself often saying, don't they think I know that? That if I could be living that right now, I would be? And it seems very loving to allow that room, not just for the person, but to also remember that one of the chants that our chanters were singing this morning, he knows whom he lets know. And that line just stuck with me because it just says, in God's time, when God knows it's time for us to hear something, he finds a way to tell us. We all have our story. I've listened to hundreds of them from many of you and other people, we all have, about how Master came to us or a teacher came to us at exactly the moment we didn't even know it. We may not have been asking for that lesson, but just in that moment we were open to it and we could hear it because they know. One of the other things that Asha said right when she was standing at the Jesus Shrine, again on Guru Day, that was so compelling for me, and I don't know where the quote was from, but it was a quote, she said it was a quote, that every great master who has ever lived, every avatar, remains as a vibration in the ether. That is so extraordinary, knowing that every great master who's ever lived is there for us in that vibration as energy. As soon as we are ready to touch into that vibration. I mean, Master's own words in 1949, interestingly enough, on July 31st, which is the day today, at a garden party in Beverly Hills, when he said the very words that led Swami Kriyananda on his path to develop communities to bring us where we are today, where he said, "This day marks the beginning of a new era." He said, "My spoken words are planted in the ether, in the spirit of God, and they will change the West." What a statement, in the spirit of God. I was reading that this morning because, interestingly, just as an aside, I was on my way out to our shrine at the community to make sure that I got the words exactly right. And my phone just pinged, like there was a message there for me. And I open up the message because I saw it said, "On this day," which are these little, "On this day" is something that the village, the people at Ananda Village send out. And they tell us, what was Yogananda doing on this day? Where was he? What did he say? What new teaching did he bring? It's a sweet little thing because it comes every day. And this, "On this day," was that on July 31st, at a garden party in Beverly Hills, Master said these words literally as I was walking out to read them. It's like Master said, "Just stay where you are, honey. I'll bring them to you." I looked at it. I just couldn't even believe it. You just have to love God. You just have to love God when those things happen. But those words remind us, and they are planted in the ether, in the spirit of God, meaning in all that is, these words are true. They will change the West. That these masters are in the ether permanently. They're there. They know exactly when we're ready. In a very sweet line that I read some time ago about Master's comments about Rajasi, who was, we know, his highest, most highly evolved male disciple. He said about when he said about when he gave him samadhi, he said his soul was ripe. Just letting us know that there's a reason for when these teachings are shared and how they're shared. He sent a beautiful letter to Rajasi at some point. Rajasi had obviously written to him that he had gone to Mount Washington and had worked with a certain group of people. I don't know where Master was in India at the time. He wrote him from India. It was 1936. And he said to him, "I'm so glad you did that." He said, "I waited for those particular souls for at least 10 years because I knew they were yours." You see what's happening? These masters know how to guide people. These masters, we have no idea what's going on. We just walk into somebody's life and we, like, "Here, you should read this. This is for you. You should listen to this talk." Now, I'm not saying we never do that. We can offer it to somebody and say, "This was a great talk. I'd love to share it with you." But it's just interesting realizing the exquisite sensitivity and knowing and love that goes into helping people take their next step on the spiritual path. I recently had a discussion with a good friend of mine, and she was having a moment of touching into a feeling of devotion in a very profound way, and having one of those moments where she was saying to me, "But how are we going to awaken this in everybody? How are we going to make sure that all of our guru bhais are living with this devotion?" And then we just both stopped and looked at each other, and I said, we both know the answer to that. We live it. That's our role. Our role is to teach it by living it, by being that devotion, by living in terms of all of the spiritual qualities that Krishna talks about in the second part of this reading. And as we live that, our own vibration raises, our magnetism raises, and people, without knowing why, are drawn to that vibration of the divine as we are able to let it come. So it's not that we have nothing to share with those that we love. It's how we share it. We share it by living it. We share it by remembering these masters are right here, just like they came and got us. Whenever they did, whatever your story is, whatever landed you here, they'll find these other people that we love in precisely the right moment. Then, that's about them, about us, is what Krishna does. As Krishna always does, I am always amazed at the compassion and the hopefulness that Krishna shares in every stanza of the Bhagavad Gita. Because and he's done it again here, what he did, and this comes at the very 10 stanzas before the end of the Gita. He's gone through everything with Arjuna. And right near the end, he says to Arjuna, and don't share these teachings with people who have not developed these qualities. And then he gives us all of the qualities that we need to live as we would want to live on the spiritual path and to develop our own compelling need to know the truth. Because that's the other part of what I was just talking about. People need to ask questions. They need to want to know. They need to be open to know if we're not masters. So for us to share anything with anybody until they come to us and say, can you help me find the way? There's a lovely story that's in Sister Gyanamata's book. Now, Sister Gyanamata was Master's most highly evolved female disciple, and she was a great saint in her own right. The Master left her with the responsibility of writing letters, of answering questions that the devotees had. And I just want to see if I can pull this up because I haven't read it for a while. But she wrote a letter to someone and she said, I want to answer this because I want you to have it in writing. And she said, I'm going to give you 5 principles that will answer any question you have on the spiritual path. 5 spiritual principles. And they were very much like, this is why this story just came into my mind, very much like what Krishna is just saying to Arjuna. And she writes this long letter. And at the end of the letter, she says to whoever she's writing it to, don't throw this letter away, even if you're inclined to. She said, keep it. And she said, if right now you don't see the truth of it, if it doesn't resonate, if you don't believe it, save it until you do. And it was just said with so much love. Someday this will make sense to you because these are the spiritual principles upon which everything on the path, all of our effort is based. And I don't have her exact words, but I know they were very much like what Krishna was saying to Arjuna. And he said, don't share these teachings. I'll read it to you again, and then I just want to talk about each of them. Never speak of these truths, he says, to one who is without self-control or devotion, who renders no service, who does not care to hear, or who speaks ill of me. And what he's really saying to Arjuna is, or to us, as we hear it, is, you develop these spiritual principles. He's not saying, don't speak ill of me. He's saying, when you speak these truths, speak them with the sacred words in the sacred way that they were meant. Remember, this is coming at the end of the Gita. Hold my teachings up in the light in which they were delivered. Don't try and find the holes in them. Find what's wrong. Don't try and don't be a naysayer. Don't use the words to make an argument against them. Keep them as sacred. When he says, don't speak these truths to somebody who speaks ill of me, it's not simply somebody who stands up and says, I don't believe in God and I want no part of it. He's saying, don't use these teachings as a way to argue. Don't, in that way, don't use my words. Don't minimize, demean, use them in any negative word. Again, these are sacred teachings that I'm giving you. Use them that way. Hold them that way. When he says, people don't try and speak these truths to people who are without self-control. What does he mean by self-control? He means people who are too driven in the world by sense pleasures. That's what he means. Because where does that leave all of us? He's saying if you don't rise above sense pleasures, then you're restless. You can't absorb these truths. You're always looking for more ways to be satisfied. If a little is good, more is better. Oh, that didn't do it. Let me move on to more. It leaves people too restless to sit and absorb the truth. So he's saying, don't try and share it there. Hold these teachings sacred, share it when they can be received as they were meant to be received. Then he says, don't share them with people who don't render service. And he means we have to find ourselves in a place where we're rendering selfless service, grateful service, where we're serving in a way where we're not looking for a reward in life, where we offer our service up to the divine, where we remember that God is serving through us. Sri Yukteswar said, as long as we are breathing the free air of this earth, we are under obligation, he said, to render grateful service. There's a story that I heard Devarshi tell up at the village. Devarshi is a man who's now living in India and serving over there as the head of the Kriya ministry in India and in Europe, I think. But he lived at Ananda village for a long time, and he lived with his wife, Maria, who now died some years ago. But they had a very sweet habit, and I've heard him do this with other things, of taking the words of the masters and turning them into mantras in their homes. So instead of ever arguing with each other or ever having to do what I was just speaking about not doing, one of them might just say the mantra. So if they were grumbling, one of them was grumbling about doing something that needed to be done, the other one would say, oh yes, rendering grateful service. And you can see if you're a devotee of Master, in a moment, you're just lifted up out of your grumbling. So he said, once a week, on a certain night, they always cleaned their home. And his job was to clean the kitchen and the bathrooms. He said, which involved, of course, the sinks, the toilets. I actually thought when I heard that he got perhaps the raw end of the deal, but he wasn't telling us to complain. And he said, often Maria would wake up that morning, and in her very childlike, wonderful way, she would say to him, guess what we get to do tonight? And of course he knew, but he would play along and he would say, I don't know, honey, what do we get to do tonight? And she would say to him, we get to clean the guru's ashram. Isn't that beautiful? We get to clean the guru's ashram. You may be cleaning the toilet, but you are offering it up to God. You are offering it into that divine space. You are cleaning because God is everywhere. So beautiful. It takes every little thing we do and turns it into an act of rendering grateful service. And then, of course, the very last thing that Krishna says is develop your devotion. Develop your devotion. Sri Yukteswar also said, you cannot put one foot in front of the other on the spiritual path until you have opened the heart's devotion, really is what he said, moved that devotion, that love, up into your heart. And why is he saying that? Because in the heart, not when we're filled with feeling, with likes and dislikes, but when we are devoting what we're doing to God, when we're having an experience of God in the heart, it is so calm. It has reached that state where it becomes, where our energy becomes formless. And we are so calm there that it helps us open to intuition, which is really the experience of the divine. That's what it is. When we practice devotion, we are moving in a way in life that will let us have the experience of God, that which is beyond all words, that which we could never teach anybody and which we cannot teach anybody if they remain too intellectual about this. No matter how smart somebody is, no matter how intellectually accomplished they are, all of that lives in the land of duality. And you cannot speak to the soul from that place. It's a foreign language. You can only live an ego-centered life from that rational, argue, figure it out with your mind. But the minute you're living from a place of devotion, then you are living in terms of a soul reality. And from that place, you then know God, you know these truths in a way that no man could ever teach you. There's such a beautiful story in Autobiography of a Yogi. Master actually devotes a chapter to it, and it's the story of when his sister Roma comes to him. Many of you will remember this, really distressed. She's been married for many years. This is Master's older sister, who he says at the beginning of that chapter, taught him. She was a big part of his spiritual growth. And when their mother died, it was Roma who stepped in and really tried to hold the vibration high in that home. And Master just had a very particular love for her. And she came to him. Now, this is before he came to this country. He was 20. And she said to him, my husband makes fun of all of our masters and all of my path. He's mean about it. He constantly chides me about wanting to meditate, about wanting to practice. I believe there's something that you could do. And Master says, just because in the moment I so wanted to give her something, he says, I told her, I'm certain I can help. He said, let me see what I can do. He said, then an inspiration came. He was going to one of the big Kali temples in Calcutta the next day, Dakineshwar Temple. And he said, why don't you and your husband come along? Don't mention to him why you're coming. Just bring him. And he said to her, I believe that in the high vibration of that temple, Divine Mother can speak to him and allow him to feel her presence in the high vibration of that temple. I mean, the end of the story, which I will not tell in detail, but it's a beautiful story. You can read it in the AY, is that, of course, the brother does have an experience through Master of Divine Mother, and their whole life changes. He converts the big bedroom into their meditation space. He takes a tiny little bedroom for himself. He continues to work, but he stays up all night every night for the rest of his life meditating. So this is why Krishna talks about devotion and bringing a high vibration to our words, to our thoughts, to every deed that we do, because in that high vibration, God can speak to us. And then, as we know, every Sunday during our purification ceremony, we walk up here and we say, I seek purification by the grace of God. And what is the answer that the Master gives us? Open your heart to me, and I will enter and take charge of your life. And we all know the extraordinary beauty and meaning and grace of that. These masters will come to us when we can go to them and say, yes, I want you. I will keep calling you. I will have this feeling in my heart that says to you moment by moment, please come to me. I am ready. I am ready now. And of course, what can they do? Like the divine mother that Master brought to us, what can the mother do? She just picks us up in her arms and she takes us to that place which is filled with love, which is safe, where we can trust everything, because that's what mothers do. The beautiful gift that we've all been given through these masters of knowing that our divine mother is there for us. Sure.